Hey there, how you doing? Here to talk to you today about something that's near and dear to my heart, which is going to be still migrating from Windows 2003 or 2008 to 2012 R2. You'd actually be really surprised because as of today, Windows 2003 has hit its end of life support with Microsoft. And you'd be amazed as to how many customers I come across still today that still have a ton of Windows 2003 domain controllers, file servers, print servers, and a variety of other workloads, a lot of IIS servers that still haven't been migrated yet. And this is a big problem for organizations because now you're running into a situation where you're either A, out of compliance, you're going to have a tough time supporting this infrastructure. And cost of support's going to go way up because if, heaven forbid, you actually do have a critical situation that you have to phone Microsoft, you're going to be stuck in a situation where you're going to be having to pay potentially an exorbitant amount of money to continue that support. So I'm lucky enough today to let you know that we did a session at last year's MVP Days in Vancouver. And I was lucky enough to present with a really good friend of mine, Rick Byrne, who happens to work for Veeam Software. He's a senior SE for Veeam Software, and he's one of the best speakers that I've had a chance to present with in the recent past here. He'll actually be speaking with me again this year. We'll be doing some virtualization sessions again at MVP Days 2015. And so, what we're going to talk about in the coming video that I'm going to show you is some techniques that have been derived from the field. These are things that I use in production when going around to customer environments. And this is almost like a bulletproof solution that we've been able to come up with for getting customers off their old, antiquated, aging infrastructure. So what we'll do is as soon as we come back from the break that we're about to take is we'll take you right into the video and show you some of these tips and tricks. Are we good?
Good.
Check. Can you guys hear me? All right, excellent. Okay, my last presentation of the day here, Rick. This has been a whirlwind adventure so far. So
Nice.
once again, guys, thank you very much for showing your support for Canadian MVP Days. Absolutely awesome to have everyone come out and learn some new stuff. Special thanks to our sponsors for helping us put on this awesome event. We just finished up some lunch. It was amazing. And so hopefully you guys are ready to make a few notes on migrating Windows roles to Server 2012. I've been actually doing a lot of projects like this in the past probably 6, 7 months. Customers are starting to ramp up. And so decided to actually put together a nice little deck on some of the things that we've seen. Just a quick reminder, CDN MVP Days, we are giving away the Surface Pro, so just keep those tweets going. We've got lots of good ones in there so far. All right, Rick, we're here to talk about migrating from Windows 2003, and I'll say or 2008, to 2012 R2.
But why would you do that? Virtualization, we don't need to.
Well, I like to P to V servers, Rick, and so I just take these old servers and I P to V them and I put them in my data center and then they just run forever.
And
Isn't that how it works?
that's the way the business wants it, right? I mean, why run the latest and greatest and, compliance and updates? Who needs that? Virtualization can save us. Veeam, back it up. You never had to worry about it, right?
That's absolutely true. I've got no
Okay.
worries. I've got no worries on any of my projects because I use Veeam for everything. So it is a big issue, guys, and this is a big pain point for a lot of customers here today in the fact that, July is coming up very quickly. July of 2015 is your end-of-life deadline for Windows 2003. And you don't want to be caught in that trap of taking and being out of platform support. It's one thing to run your XP boxes on the desktop. It's another thing to run your servers and your data center on a platform that you're not going to be able to patch and be fully supported. So once again, I'm Dave Kula. I'm a Hyper-V MVP. I've been in the space a long time.
And I'm lucky enough to actually have my good friend Rick Byrne, who's a senior SE with Veeam Software. And we actually engage and do a lot of projects together in Western Canada surrounding this exact topic lately.
And I mean, one thing we have going for us, I mean, Dave is a Microsoft MVP. I'm a VMware vExpert. So we kind of know both scales, and that really helps.
Absolutely. So a couple of the things that have come to life here since I built this deck is I actually did a couple of production 2003 to 2012 R2 migrations in the last couple weeks. And we'll get to some interesting things that happened from the field. Very interesting things you guys are going to want to pay attention to. So let's take a little bit of a look at our agenda here, Rick, and see what some of the things that we're going to cover are. So we're going to talk first a little bit about Windows 2003 R2 end of life support and what this means for you and when this is going to happen and that you need to take things seriously starting right now. Our session will cover topics around migrating core infrastructure roles only. We will not be telling you how to migrate web servers or Exchange or SQL. That's a discussion for another day. We're going to talk about core foundational level services, including Active Directory, DNS, DHCP, file, and print. If you haven't started one of these projects yet, you're going to be starting one very, very soon. Most of my customers took their existing Active Directory 2003 servers or their file and print servers running 2003, and they were running on physical platform hardware, and they P2V'd them, they put them on Hyper-V or VMware, and the things have just been running now for the past 5-7 years. Just show of hands, how many of you have done that? Did you guys P2V your file servers and print servers and stuff like that? And so now is the time where I like to say you get to take off the proverbial Band-Aid, because that's what you did, is you gave yourself a nice big Band-Aid for your infrastructure, because let me guess, the hardware was dying, it was out of warranty, and you just wanted to get some more life out of it. Well, now your OS is out of warranty, all right, as of July of next year. So now we actually do need to think about this and do something about it. So the good news is that the process isn't actually as complicated as what one may think. So we'll go through what this is actually going to look like. Rick and I have built this presentation based on a notes from the field type talk. Now, we only have 45 minutes, so one of the things I'm going to throw out there to you guys in the audience here today is that Rick is going to buy everybody beers. Oh, wait, sorry, that was another presentation.
You missed one in the morning.
So what I'm going to throw out there is that I have a session that I do when I come into a customer, and it's a day-long migration workshop. And what we do is we take you from a 2003 and 2008 world. I actually took one of my production 2003-2008 Active Directory file print DHCP all-in-one type servers, and I threw it into a lab environment. It's about the oldest and ugliest thing that you could possibly think of, and probably similar to what you'd see for stuff you're getting rid of in your infrastructure. And we migrate all of that over to 2012 and 2012 R2 in a one-day workshop, okay? It takes about a day to go through everything. I have 45 minutes. So this is not going to be a huge demo-heavy session, but I'm going to lead in a lot of the concepts that you're going to need to understand. If you're interested in doing something like that, that's something that we typically don't charge for. It's just something kind of informative. So if I can get enough people that are interested in Vancouver, we will come back and we can just get like a hotel room, or if somebody has boardroom space or something like that, we will come back and do that session as kind of a sidecar to this. But I need almost a full day to actually go through everything to do it justice, all right? Okay, so the first one, your migration paths. First and foremost, you have to take and watch your underlying operating system architecture. This is going to be a big issue for you depending on what roles you're actually migrating. This came back to bite me in the butt about 3 weeks ago as I was migrating old Windows 2003 x86 print server and trying to go up to 2012 R2. The about three or four ones that I had done prior to that were like x64 to x64. They went smooth as silk. I had like two drivers not working. Everything slid in. clients were running like all Windows 7 workstations, no problem. Now, the last one I did, full of problems. x86 print server to x64. First of all, it doesn't work. So you have to take and actually go ahead and like load all the x64 drivers, and there's a whole bunch of extra steps. Okay, so that's why I put that in there, watch your platform architectures that you're going from. Taking anything x86 to 64, just note in the back of your mind that you might have a little bit more work to do there. Physical versus virtual, stop P to V-ing boxes. You're going to need to take and you're going to need to rip that Band-Aid off, and you're going to need to take and do something about these old servers out there. You're migrating now. There's no more room to P to V and save these old boxes. We need to get them over to newest, latest, and greatest platform. I'm going to show you some tips and tricks that I have. I migrated a customer with about 4 terabytes of usable data on their 2003 file server over to 2012 R2 in a little less than an hour. And I'll just wait, pause, so that'll just, so you can reflect on that for a second. 4 terabytes of data into a usable file server in a little less than an hour. Okay, I'll tell you how to do that when we get to the file services section, as long as we don't run out of time. If we run out of time, then
I had to buy beer.
Yeah.
Is that what's happening?
Exactly.
But I mean, what you're finding with the migration, Dave, you're finding it as a, you can do a lot of the work in the background first, doing a migration over an upgrade, because you can bring up those workloads, do stuff in the day, then kick it over in a maintenance window. Is that what you're finding customers love?
Absolutely. The outage time that's required for this is absolutely minimal, okay? So we have a staged approach for going through this. I've got a tried and tested and true process that we use for going through these migrations, and if you follow it, you will be successful. You're always going to have little things that'll pop up, but for the most part, I'm getting only a handful of tickets coming in the morning into the service desk. Most times, the end users aren't even noticing anything. And for us, that's mission. That's a job well done. That's mission accomplished.
And you still get that server to back out if need be.
Yep, absolutely. I always back up first with Veeam, and then I'd never have to worry about anything. All right. I always want a big red button, guys, when I do these migrations. Does that make sense? You know the Staples Easy button? Normally when I present these things, if I have enough time, I actually tried to go to Staples last night and buy the Staples Big Red Easy button. You want a Staples Big Red Easy button to go back. You need it, all right?
How about a Veeam foam hat that it just works?
Yeah, there you go. That'll work too for a nice big button so that you can press it. So if something goes wrong, you always need a way back. And you'll see why, because I actually ran into an issue with this a little while ago. So we'll lead into that in the Active Directory section. 290 plus days is all that you have left, all right? Do you know how long it takes to plan one of these projects? I'm not going to say that you're out of luck. We are being recorded, so I normally have more choice words that I have for this. So at this point in time, would it be safe to say, Rick, that you're stuck in a shotgun approach to this?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Are you going to feel some pain during these projects, leaving it to the last minute like this?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the business might feel pain as well if it's not done properly.
So what Rick and I will do is we'll provide you with the flak jacket so that at least you don't get beat up too bad, right? You're going to take and feel some pain during these projects, though. There is not enough time to catch everything. I'm not going to give you a facade here that's going to take and paint a picture in such a way that, oh, it's going to be perfect and beautiful and nothing will happen, nothing will break. There's not enough time to test everything at this point in time. You just got to go for it. But we've got to minimize risk where possible, okay? So we're going to try to help you through that where we can. All right, so this is what it means for you. No Windows updates. In 2013, for Server 2003 and 2003 R2, there was over 37 critical updates, all right? So that was back in 2013, not including 2014.
And I mean, that's just your critical updates, right? I'm sure there was more than that. Hot fixes, this and that, lots of fixes.
No more. So you guys aren't going to be able to get those updates anymore. So that's just what it means come July, right? You're not going to be in compliance anymore on those servers, so all of a sudden you're going to start failing your audits. You're going to take, and you're not going to have a safe haven for this stuff anymore. Listen, your servers are still going to run. They're not like they're just going to shut off. But the problem is that if you end up in a situation where you get a critical update that is required for these things and you need it, what Microsoft did for the XP program is they took and they started charging for you to enter into that program. They would charge you like $100,000 and then so many bucks per patch and stuff like that. Now, don't quote me on prices and stuff like that, because I deal with some really big enterprise customers, so the numbers are really high. but that was typically what an entry point to those big programs were like. They were not pretty for those businesses to keep those old boxes around and supported. All right, so the time to act is now. Take the resources and utilities that we give you and really try to move forward. So Rick, are there any good tools that are out there that would help you kind of go through a four-step process here where you discover, assess, target the outstanding machines and then actually migrate? Or what are some of the tools that are out there? Does Microsoft have one that would help us with
Microsoft
this?
Microsoft does, I mean, and they're free. They're built in. They're in the solution. You download them, you update them. They're the migration toolkit already in place that somebody already spent all that development money on to make. But I'm sure Dave got other ways to even streamline that a little bit better.
Wait a minute. You mean the migration tools are already built into Server 2012?
That they are.
That's pretty cool. So all your migration tools that you'll need for the most part are built right into Server 2012. That being said, just because Microsoft puts them there doesn't necessarily mean that that's the way that we're going to do things or use those technologies. We like to sometimes get a little bit more creative so that we can take and have what I like to call a little better way of doing things in the field, right? When it comes time to discovering what you have out there for your infrastructure, Microsoft spent an awful long time building the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. Show of hands for anybody that's tried this or used this piece of software. Might have looked at it for like your Windows 7 project and stuff like that. It also works for your server platforms, which is great. And so some of the things that you're going to have to do is get an inventory of what it is that you have out there. And trust me, as you start migrating some of these services, you're going to find out pretty quick. So first you're going to try to figure out what you have, assess what you have, and then try to make some plans. So for example, when you take and you have a file server, what are you going to do with the file server? Are you going to move it over to a new platform? Was the file server commingled with any other roles? Was the file server also a print server and it was also a DHCP server and also running DNS? Or was it just a file server? In a perfect world for me, you would already split those roles off and a file server was just a file server, a print server was just a print server, okay? They're easier to segment the roles off that way. When we commingle roles, things get a little bit more complicated. But in a perfect world where they're not split, where they're not commingled like that, it's actually pretty easy to peel these roles off, okay? Some of the techniques that we use, we'll see you swapping IP addresses, stealing computer names and stuff like that so that we can maintain services on the network, which are all fine. But what we want to do is we want to take and make sure that we go through this the right way. And remember, always, before you take and you go through and do this, make sure you've got a backup plan. Make sure you've got a backup of that existing infrastructure where possible. Hopefully most of your infrastructure is virtualized now because it's relatively easy to back up that infrastructure while virtualized. So there's very few things that you can do to that infrastructure that we can't fix. So the big, something bad happens, normally we have a way to get things back. All right? So for our one-day workshop that we have, we've got a fully functional test environment where we've got existing 2003 servers and 2008 servers, and we migrate all of that stuff over to a new 2012 R2 platform. And I actually set it up in a multi-site configuration where we did a branch office during that same process. So we took a head office and a branch office because typically the branch was a little bit of a different process that we wanted to go through. The branch was kind of an all-in-one domain controller, DNS, DHCP, file print, NTP, everything at that location, whereas we split off a few of the roles at head office. So I kind of covered two scenarios when we went through and we did that.
So if we can get enough people here in Vancouver, you'll come out and you'll actually kick off this exact dev environment for them during that class.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's what I was trying to get at, was that, you know, down the road, if there's enough interest, for sure, we'll come back. We'll come back for kind of a full day session on this.
Yeah, and I mean, we could probably throw some Veeam servers in there too.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely. All right. So now step number one is you have to take and you have to prepare your migration tools. So on your source server that you're going to be pulling from, you need to make sure that you have enough disk space. So you need to make sure that you have a minimum of 23 megabytes of free disk space to install these tools.
23 megs?
So what that means is if your disk is full, you have to clean it up a little bit.
I guess I can find some floppies and move some stuff off.
Well, I was thinking you could take like the really big floppies and we'll see if we can get those hooked up. All right, you're going to need to have .NET Framework 2.0 installed. I know that this may or may not be there on the source server, but in all honesty, at this point in time, I could really care less what you install on the source server because it's going away anyways. Put what you need to on there. In my demo environment that I have, I wasn't kidding when I said that I have a really old infrastructure in there. You need a copy of at least PowerShell 1.0 or later on that Source 2003 server. And on my dev server that I had that I brought over, I had PowerShell 1.0 beta 2 on there. And I actually got a tweet from the session that I did in the CloudOS Roadshow on that. Marcos was nice enough to catch that for me. Shocker. And so PowerShell will not install over top of that. So you can't just install PowerShell when you have an old beta version of PowerShell on there. So I had to go uninstall PowerShell and then reinstall it.
So Dave, you mentioned PowerShell, and that's scripting. I'm scared of scripting.
What's
that mean to me?
Most of these commands that you'll have to run are very, very well documented, and they're mostly one-liners. So when you have to go through and run these commands to actually migrate these servers, if you use the server migration toolkit, it would probably be a lot of one-liners that you'd be running to take source to destination. There's still some process work that we have to do in behind, but it's still important to take and make sure that, you know, you understand what it is you're doing. And that's why we've gone through and documented the entire process. Now, we've taken this actually one step further, Rick, is I'm about halfway done writing a book on this exact topic. So I've got about 100 or 125 pages authored already, and I just have to somehow find time to finish it. And so outside of running road shows and stuff like this. So this is actually going to be content in an upcoming book on advanced Windows migrations as well. So hopefully stay tuned.
So Dave likes long walks on the beach.
Exactly.
That type of thing, right?
Yep. And I'm hoping that it comes out in August of 2015.
Nice.
Yep. Did you guys catch when the date was? It'll be out just in time. All right, so once you're done, all you have to do is just make sure you have your free disk space. Install the server migration tools on your 2012 R2 server. This can be on any 2012 R2 server. You just have to install it. And then you're just going to copy the migration files over to your source server. So just copy this up to a share. You have to create two platform packages in order to use the SMIG tools, which is the x86 platform and the x64 platform. So you actually have to run that line twice, once for x86 and once for x64, and please don't put them into the same directory because they don't work very well if you do that. Make sure you have two separate folders for those because you'll run into some very interesting results if you take and mix match those files. All right, seen that happen, so I figured I'd mention that. And then all you have to do is the utility you're going to use for most of this from Microsoft's standpoint is SMIG deploy. And so that'll cover DHCP, that'll cover your files, that'll cover a lot of different types of exports you have. Now, personally, that's great. You can try to do that stuff, but I've got a little bit better ways of taking and migrating some of these pieces. Now, Rick, I don't think the SMIG tools will help us with Active Directory, though, will it? I don't think so. So we'll have to do something else for our Active Directory and our DNS. So typically, what's the most critical thing that you have inside of your infrastructure? DNS?
What could go wrong if that's down?
Okay, so first of all, has anybody had issues with DNS in the past? And if all of you don't put up your hands, you're all lying. Because this is going to take, and this
it
is
means
gonna,
you need more coffee.
This is going to break your infrastructure real fast, right? So I'll ask the question again, and you can answer by clapping your hands, all right? Is DNS important to your infrastructure? Yes, absolutely is important. So how hard is it for you to migrate Active Directory integrated DNS? Or actually, first of all, show of hands from the crowd, how many of you run Active Directory integrated DNS? Well, if you're running Active Directory, you're probably running Active Directory integrated DNS. Have you guys ever migrated an Active Directory integrated DNS zone before? Is it actually really that hard? Don't you just kind of install DNS and then replicate AD, yeah, like, and then doesn't it just kind
next,
of happen?
Next, it just works.
Yeah, I like it. I wish all the migrations could be that easy. So I just need to have Active Directory replication working, and then everything is all good and happy, right? So no problem. But what about all the rest of those settings that are going to be inside of there? So Active Directory integrated DNS, I think we can agree, is the easiest part of your project. You can schedule that tomorrow if you want. It should be fairly safe. The problem that you're going to run into is all your standalone DNS zones. How many of you guys have standalone DNS zones that are running standard primary or standard secondary inside of your infrastructure? There's a few. Okay. That's going to be a little trickier because that data is not actually stored in Active Directory. That data is stored in flat files, and all the configurations that you have for DNS are actually stored in registry keys. So guess what we can do with registry keys? We can export them. And then guess what we can do on the target server? We can import them. And guess what happens? All of my zones show up for me. So the process is this. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. You go to your Windows directory, DNS. You're going to see a whole bunch of .dns zone database files. You copy those from your source server, and you put them on your target server. You export the registry from your source server, and you import it onto the target server. You start the DNS service, and like magic, you have all of these standard primary and secondary zones all pre-populated for you.
So I think I've heard you say this before. So is it really as easy as Control-C and Control-V?
Yeah, it is. I actually have a catchphrase for Hyper-V. If you can Control-C, Control-V, you can manage Hyper-V. That's pretty good. If you can Control-C, Control-V, you can migrate DNS too. Okay, so DNS is not going to be the hardest thing you have to do. And the nice thing is that we can migrate DNS whenever we want, because until we change the IP addresses of the source and target servers, all your clients will still keep pointing to the old server. Once we swap that IP address or we change the DHCP scope to have all of your clients pointing over to the new server, that's when it'll get activated. So this server could actually be online and live for quite some time before we actually migrate. So this could be done completely offline and have zero impact to the business, and then we just have a cutover and we can bring it over. Okay, good news. That's not going to be the biggest part of your problem. Migrating your Active Directory. Wow. I've done a lot of Active Directory migrations over the years, guys. I've actually taken and run tons of Windows 2000, Windows 2003, 2008 boot camps installing Active Directory, migrated big Active Directory
you
for organizations.
You must have a horror story then, hey?
Rick, I'm going to tell you something. Something happened to me on my last project about 3 weeks ago that I was not expecting. I took and I figured, okay, well, I've got this tried and true and proven process for migrating Active Directory. Never fail, tell my customers, oh, you know, last job, one ticket, no problem, everything was good and perfect and beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah, until the hotfix that came out in July of this year. There's kind of a little bit of an issue introducing your very first 2012 R2 Active Directory server into a 2003 environment. Microsoft added some new groups. They added some new authorization groups and some new SIDs in behind the scenes, and it changes the way that web applications are allowed to do LDAP queries against Active Directory.
So just hold on.
So what this means for you is that all your clients will work. So when you're testing all of your clients, everything will work fine. But what about those pesky web servers, Rick? With custom code that run old Active Directory queries.
That sounds bad.
Yeah, when you've got a corporate application that's probably making the company a couple $1 million a month, outside client facing says, sorry, can't query this SID anymore. That's probably a bad thing when they can't even log on to the application anymore.
You had change management in place. I mean, you knew it was failing after the Active Directory upgrade because it failed every time. So, I mean, it was easy to figure out, wasn't it?
Oh, it was pretty challenging, Rick, I got to tell you, because I really didn't see that one coming. So just to reiterate, I just introduced this new domain controller, which I'd done 100 times, no problem. DC promo, you guys get the deal. Go through and bring up that new domain controller. And as soon as it comes into the mix as a live domain controller, bad news. What ended up happening was, I just wanted to get closer to me.
Yeah.
What ended up happening was is that Active Directory domain controllers run a round-robin mechanism when they go to authenticate with one another. And so when they've got two domain controllers in a site, it'll take half of the traffic for one server, half for another. So this is the works, works, fails type scenario, because I had two 2003 domain controllers, and now I had one 2012. So it was like, it was working. We rebooted the web server, it failed. We rebooted, it works, and then we rebooted again, and it fails. Oh, wow, that's a fun one to catch, isn't it? The good news is that we were able to do something called LDAP SRV tuning. So there's a registry key that you can actually change, and thank goodness I actually do know what I'm doing. And we were able to tweak the registry value on that new domain controller, because I really didn't want to decommission that new domain controller. I wouldn't give up. I was actually able to take it out of the mix, so it had a higher weighting than the other server, so it actually stopped authenticating traffic. Okay, good news. And so then we actually had a chance to fix this. Good news, guys. I only have 45 minutes here. Check CanIT Pro. My latest post I put up on CanIT Pro, I documented this process, okay? It is scary. The hot fix for this only came out in June 30th of 2014 and impacts Windows Server 2008 R2 machines. And so I had to go patch my Server 2008 R2 web server, and miraculously the thing started querying Active Directory again.
So you only had to patch one server?
Yes. And inside the article it says, thou shalt patch everything on your network. So, and that's actually the way that it reads. It says, patch everything. So I was like, are you kidding me? I got 2,500 workstations out there. I'm not going to go patch 2,500 workstations with this hotfix. So I colored outside the lines a little bit, like I sometimes do, and I just patched the web server first, and it fixed my problem, okay? So the moral of this story is that before you ever proceed with any of these migrations, check the Microsoft sites for current hotfixes, patches, issues, anything that's going on, all right? Because I was only 1 month out of this particular issue, and I normally stay fairly current on this stuff, and 1 month came back to bite me in the butt, all right? So it's posted, it's up on CanIT Pro under my name, and I made sure that I documented this for people. So back to the job at task here. So we've got to get rid of this old Active Directory. Couple things that we've got to make sure are in place. Number one is you need to make sure that your current Active Directory forced functional level and your domain functional levels are sitting at 2003. So if you're at 2000 mode, it's not going to be available for you. It's really easy to do that. After that's done, you've got to take and run AD prep to extend the schema. Then you can promote your new 2012 R2 domain controller. Is DC Promo still there anymore? Does DC Promo exist in 2012 R2? And the answer is no. You actually have to do it through the roles in Server Manager now. There's no more such thing as DC Promo anymore. And it was there, by the way, in 2012. Mm-hmm. It's only 2012 R2 that DC Promo has been deprecated. Okay? So you'll go ahead and you'll run it. It's the same next finish that you run for a replica domain controller that you'd have for years. You're going to allow it to replicate. If you guys don't know this right now, as soon as that domain controller comes online for the very first time, stop and start the netlogon service. The reason you want to do that is that's what controls the propagation of the service records for Active Directory, and it just forces those to go into DNS. Second thing is, under IPv6, after you build one of those new domain controllers, the IPv6 interface on those 2012 R2 domain controllers sets themselves to localhost for DNS resolution. I don't know if you knew that or not. You need to go into your IPv6 interface and set that back to DHCP on DNS. Otherwise, it won't go look at one of the good domain DNS servers that you've got out there. So make sure that you flip that IPv6 interface. It's done it to me over and over again. I've done probably half a dozen of these things. All right? Then the last things that you're going to look at doing after everything's all nice and safe is then you can look at starting to demote your old 2003 DCs and start upgrading. Now, the good news is I never actually DC promo down the old domain controllers. What I do is I change their LDAP SRV priority to a higher value now than the 2012 boxes, and I actually drain stop them away so I can actually leave them online for a longer period of time, and they just stop authenticating traffic. I can go check the perfmon keys and see what LDAP traffic is actually hitting them, and once they start to hit zero, I know that nothing is using them anymore. And if I do still see things hitting them, I know I have multifunction printers and things like that that are hard-coded to their IP address, okay? So how do we get rid of that problem? We simply steal its IP. Then what we do is we DC promo down the old box and we change its name. So then we call it, you know, domain controller dash old. I take the existing name of the old domain controller and I create a CNAME record in DNS and I point that to the new domain controller. That way any of the LDAP queries that are going across from those multifunction printers are now going to go to the new box. So yeah, okay, I'm band-aiding it by keeping the old name around, but you know what else that does? All of your, if you have drive mappings and stuff like that, printer logons or logon scripts and things like that, they'll all go to the new server now. Okay? So we have a way to port some of those things over. All right, so migrating DHCP. The first and foremost thing you have to know about DHCP is the way that the DHCP request process works. When you have a client and it requests an IP address from a DHCP server, If you ever do an IP config, have you noticed how it lists your DHCP server's IP address in the IP config slash all? Do you see that? It says, oh, well, I just got it from this particular DHCP server. It remembers that IP address for the duration of its lease on the client. And so what ends up happening is if that client is going to be successfully ported over to a new DHCP server, we have to steal the IP address of that particular DHCP server. It is a requirement. So DHCP is typically one of the very last things that we'll do during an outage window. Because at the end of me taking the database over from the old to the new, I need to set the IP address of the old server. That way the clients will just think that that DHCP server is there. Good news for you is I can take all DHCP configuration information, all lease information, all reservations, all scope options, everything. I can grab it all at once. You can use the server migration tools for this, right, Rick?
But I heard you say something strange. You said the last thing you do is move the database?
Oh, yeah. So do you guys not know about that? I thought everybody knew about that, Rick. So the DHCP database lives in this very modern technology. It's called a JET database. Very modern. I don't know if you guys have heard of this before. It's the same thing Microsoft Access runs on, okay? And it's been the same type of database for like the last 20 years that Microsoft's had for DHCP. So if you're ever in a pickle, this is what you do. Old DHCP server dies. And I'm talking about really dies, Rick.
Gone.
Yeah, hardware just blew up. But luckily, it was sitting inside of a virtual machine. Luckily, I was protected by Veeam. And luckily, I could gain access to the file system in that old DHCP server. I grab the DHCP server database, and what I do is I hit, get this, Control C, and it copies the database for me.
What do you think is next?
Then what you do, you Control V it. No, first you stop the service on the new one. So you have to stop the service on the new one, and then you hit Control V. But you have to just get rid of the log files first. It's kind of like replaying an old Exchange database and stuff. So just make sure that there's no log files in there, just the database. As soon as you start the service, bam, you have a DHCP server. Okay? So that's what I'll call the Dave way of migrating DHCP. Or what you could do is you could do like SMIG tools, and you could take and you could migrate it the right way and go scope by scope or zone scope by scope or the whole thing. And they're just one-liners that you run, but in essence, it does the same thing. The nice thing about the migration tools is it doesn't have to take every scope at once. You might only want to do a few at a time for testing purposes. And so what you can do with the migration tools is choose them and select them on a scope-by-scope basis. Or you can just use the good old-fashioned way of using NetSH. So there's really three ways of doing it. NetSH, the SMIG tools, or just copy the entire database over from one server to another. I have done in production copying the entire database over, and it does work. Okay? At the end of it, though, you have to steal the IP address, okay, in order for that to function. Otherwise, all of your leases are junk inside of there. So it needs the IP address of the old box. So this is going to be one of the last things that you'll do. All right. So migrating your file and your DFS servers over is actually pretty straightforward. I just did a very, very large DFS migration. DFS was probably one of the easiest things I've had to do. All that I had to do is create DFS targets on the new 2012 server, and they picked up right away. Active Directory replication was good, and so the DFS infrastructure just picked up and swung across. So that migration was beautiful. I just had to make sure that I had enough staging space for the DFS volumes and stuff like that. So no real issues to report on migrating DFS, so that's good news. But the problem was that some of those file servers had non-DFS enabled shares, and so now you have to try to decide what to do with those. So you could do the good old-fashioned way of using SMIG tools, and you can go on a folder-by-folder basis. It's actually really cool. It can actually encrypt that traffic going across the wire.
Slow.
Oh.
Is it?
Go
can
ahead.
You disable it?
Go ahead. Try that with 4 terabytes of data. See how long that takes you. You great for consulting business because I just get to watch a progress bar for 4 weeks.
It's just dollar symbols going across.
That's right.
That's so why it's green.
It's awesome. So I've decided that I just need to start figuring out ways to not charge by the hour because I just keep making less and less money, Rick. So So that's one way of doing it. You could take and you could use SMIG tools. You could also use this thing called RoboCopy. Yeah. So I like RoboCopy. I've used RoboCopy for years.
Move over the permissions, yeah. Look at everything that changed.
MirrorSec, SecFix, you know, you can take and you can swing that stuff across. I also figured out there's a couple cool blog posts that are out there where I can increase the thread count on that to about 32. Really pins your machine. Doesn't copy so much faster, but really pins the processor on that machine when you're copying across. I can use RoboCopy to move them across. But as a last resort, I actually had a customer make this suggestion to me. We had 4 terabytes of data sitting on a Windows 2003 Hyper-V VM. And luckily enough, the customer, when we had built all of this, they had taken and they had built each of the data volumes in separate VHD files. So they had an I drive and a P drive, and they had all these SCSI drives that were connected. And so we got to thinking, there's nothing really wrong with those VHDs. We can always convert them later. But instead of taking and copying anything, what we did is we stood up a 2012 R2 server on the same box, and all that we did is we just detached the VHDs from the 2003 box, and we attach them to the 2012 box, and I can show you my string of text messages that I have with the customer. Okay, P drive's done. It's a CAD firm, so they're making all these CAD drawings and stuff like that, and drafting and draftsmen and stuff like that. There's probably like $10 million worth of files inside of that directory, who knows. Okay, 20 seconds later as it reattaches, okay, it's done, check it. Okay, I drive's done. Okay, I couldn't text fast enough with reattaching, and I didn't even use PowerShell. Okay, so that's one instance where I wouldn't use PowerShell because I really didn't want to mess around with all their prod data. But luckily, I'd backed up the server with VM ahead of time, so I really didn't worry about screwing anything up. But it was amazing. So when I did that, and I took from the old 2003 to the 2012 R2, all of the NTFS permissions stayed intact on those volumes. Beautiful, so no permission issues. And then you can export a LANMAN registry key to take over all the shares. So boom, so as soon as I grab.
So they pay you to do this stuff?
Yeah, I think I made 3 hours billable time for that. You got some pretty good value out of me for that job. I think next time we'll charge by the volume or something like that. That might be a better way of doing it. So just so you guys know, just because this stuff is written, when you look at these migrations, sometimes you have to get creative and think outside the box. So in that case, we migrated over 4 terabytes of data over this new 2012 R2 box. The worst part about it is that the 2003 server was actually blue screening, so it was actually having issues because it was an old PetaVeet instance and the thing was just dying. Like we were having a tough time keeping it going for longer than a day. And so that was a big one for us, was actually being able to get that migration over.
Yeah, especially trying to use something like even a RoboCopy if that machine is blue screening.
Yeah.
You got problems right there.
Exactly, because I was putting so much pressure on it trying to do the RoboCopy that the thing would just die. And so for me to actively get the data off of those volumes was a pain. How many of you guys have ever had a dying SAN before? Dropping too many drives on the SAN and then performance just goes to nothing, right? So those SANs will typically go into kind of they'll go into a mode where they're like in a fail-safe mode, mm-hmm. where they're just feeding you the minimum amount of I/O that they possibly can. I had it happen with like an HP left-hand SAN where I dropped like 7 drives. It was a bad shipment of drives, and so I dropped 7 drives. It was still running, but was it slow? It was so slow. Like file copies were like at 1 meg a second. And so for me to get that data off there would have never really happened. So it was a big problem. And so the answer from that particular vendor was flatten your SAN and redo it because there's something wrong with our firmware. Oh, okay. Well, good news is I had Veeam on another storage array and we were able to get the data back. So good news there. Okay, so I got a few more minutes here. So the last one that I wanted to talk to you guys about was the print servers. So hopefully you've been able to pick up something cool for the first few migration scenarios. Most do, they'll pick up one or two little things. Print servers are actually, ironically, supposed to be easy to migrate. Supposed to be easy to migrate.
All right. Well, in IT, we all love managing printers, right? Oh, yeah, that's a nightmare for IT guys, yeah. Right? Printers?
Yes, yeah, it is a lot of fun. And you learn a lot of really interesting things with cross-platform support on this, too. So like I said with the printers, Rick, I'd done a few of these in the past. Probably 6 months where I went from 64-bit to 64-bit print server. So if you're going to make a note, 64-bit to 64-bit is okay. It's not that hard to migrate. you know, give yourself a couple hours on Friday, you're mm-hmm. you're probably in business on this thing. No problem, right? Going from x86 to x64, yeah, it's kind of a problem. So this is what the process looks like, is that you have to actually take and first of all run install the printer management console. So it's just as part of the printer role on the 2012 R2 server. And then what you do is you open the printer management console, you attach your old print server into that console, no problem. You go computer, add, like two clicks, you see all the queues, the drivers, the ports, and you see everything there, right? Then what you do is you right click, and then you say export. And then it exports everything out for you, and everything seems good and happy. And in most cases, you're not gonna have any issues. It creates this nice little printer migration XML files and stuff like that. Last one I did was like 200 megs of data, and it seemed good, it seemed fine. And then I went to go import this into my 2012 box, and it says, oop, sorry, error, won't go. What it actually wanted me to do is take those 150 printers that I had in there and put the 64-bit drivers in there first. I was like, well, okay, your utility is kind of absolutely useless now. What am I supposed to do with this? I still use the utility because it does recreate the shares, it creates all the IP ports and everything like that, but the utility actually needs to run. So I just right-click on the new server and say import. That's how hard it's supposed to be. But instead, I had to go and download all these 64-bit drivers and install them. Okay, that seemed like a really good job for someone else, not me. So I went to the IT manager and I said, well, you've got somebody there, they've got a little bit of extra time on their hands, that seems like a really good job for somebody else. So we gave them 3 or 4 days and they installed all the printer drivers on there. And we were successful. We were successfully able to import all of those printer drivers on there. The problem is that what we forgot about was all the new printer drivers were only compatible with Windows 7. So all the XP machines were complaining bloody murder when they went to go connect to these things in the morning. All right, so note to self. There's a little thing called a Type 3 and a Type 4 printer driver. You better watch those and understand which way you need to go, because one of the drivers is for XP and one of the drivers is for Windows 7, and you need to make sure that you load the applicable driver for the applicable platform on that new print server. And if you look inside the printer management console, you scroll all the way to the right, it'll actually show you Type 3 and Type 4 drivers that you have inside of your print server. And so just noting that, that'll save you an awful lot of pain for your printer migration. You follow those steps and you shouldn't have a whole ton of issues as you're going through that particular migration. So that's probably gonna wrap up our time here, Rick. The migration's the same type deal. You can just CNAME off the old print server and you can have all your printer mapping scripts and stuff coming across. So I hope you guys had some value in the session. And if you have any questions, we've got about 5 minutes left for kind of a Q&A. Yes? I'll take the small business server conversation offline, because that's a really, really big commingled server. So the question was, what about SBS? And so my answer to that is, what about SBS? I know that there's a place for the small business servers and the new roles and things that Microsoft brings you over to. I've always tried to take and have dedicated servers for a specific reason. It's hard to migrate off SBS. Mm-hmm. It always has been. And we'll have to take that one offline, because it's too long for a little 30-second answer. But really good question. Thank you. Rick will give you free swag for that.
Yes, you get a cowboy hat.
Any other questions? No? Okay. Guys, thank you very much for your time. I did have a demo. I was just going to reattach some volumes, but I think we talked about that enough. I just want to get the content in. And the next steps for you guys is going to be, if you're interested, come see Rick and myself. And what we'll do is we'll try to schedule another session to come out to Vancouver, and we'll actually do this hot and live in a full day-long session, if that's something that's of interest. We'll just kind of do it as another community initiative. All right? Does that sound like a good plan? All right. Excellent. Guys, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.